You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show, this week in WordPress and SaaS. In this episode, we're going to be talking all things AI with our guest, Max Zabel. I've totally butchered his surname. I've managed to insult another guest, which I do every week, or it seems to be. But Max just seems to laugh it off because he seems a good soul. Like I say, in this episode, we're going to be discussing all things AI, what it is. I've never known a subject in tech that gives different answers from different experts, supposedly experts in the field. I'm totally confused. I'm sure you're totally confused. Hopefully, Max can clear the confusion a little bit. He seems up to it. So, Max. Yes, there you go. Max, would you like to give a quick 20, 30 second intro to the tribe?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Max Zabel. I'm from Germany. I'm based in Berlin, so the capital now. And I've been into WordPress since the beginning, and I will get into that later. And I've been working as a web developer for a long time. Also, I've done animation and some adjacent topics in my life. So I'm a little multidisciplinary in some topics. And as we talked about it, I'm going to also talk about AI, but that's more recent.
Yes, he's done a few presentations on the subject, which I've watched. He's done a fantastic job there. So I thought he would be a great person to have on because he's a web developer, he's into WordPress, and he's into AI. What more could you ask for, beloved tribe? So, Kurt, would you like to give a quick intro to the new listeners and viewers?
Absolutely, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana No Más. We focus a lot on e-learning and membership-type websites, and I work with the great folks at WP Tonic on the team and Lifter LMS as well.
That's fantastic. So before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple more messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I'd also like to point out we've got a sponsor for the next couple of weeks called MotorPress. They do a fantastic appointment booking plugin. You can find details about MotorPress and the other sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional or power user. You can get all these great goodies, these free goodies, by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, beloved tribe? A lot more, probably, but that's all you're going to get from that punch. So, smile, Kirk. You normally smile at that. So, there we go. So, let's delve in. So, Max, maybe you can give the listeners and viewers how you got into the world. You seem a very nice person. I get a nice vibe from you, Max. You're laughing at my jokes, my terrible jokes. But how did you get into the crazy world of web development, and how did your interest in AI start to develop, Max?
Oh, yeah, that's for me, it's a fun story because I actually started somewhere completely different. And I made a journey in my life because I started on the island of Formentera in Spain. It's like a really little island in the Mediterranean Sea. My parents were hippies. They kind of stepped out of society. My stepdad was a wood carver. So we had no electricity, no technology, no running water. We had a well, we had a fireplace, beautiful beaches, all that. That was my childhood. And so when I came to Germany, because of my mother moved there because of employment, we went straight to Berlin because she's German. And I was in my teens and I got into computers, totally fascinated me because I never had like anything to do with computers before. It was only the arcade machine occasionally in the main town in Formentera. So when I came to Berlin, I kind of lost all my friends from Spain. I got into a really nerdy little circle, got into sci-fi and all that kind of stuff. Had my first computer, CPC 646, it's Amstrad. It's really like it had a tape deck and everything. And I actually got into programming, and I was still a teen, and that's basically the background from where I'm coming. So I had like this really big jump from no technology into the midst of having this early goes at programming. And but then I switched back to living in a commune in Berlin, and that was like culture industry. I worked there, I did set design and all that kind of stuff. That was like the end of 90s. And then it came up ID software, and we were doing like game mods. We were hacking around all the youth there in the commune. And I did the first web design for our commune. We were like a cultural thing. We had like stages and a lot of variety and different kind of sets, programs. And then over that kind of connection, I really got into the whole .com era, because that was also a thing here in Berlin. I mean, America kind of pushed it, but then suddenly it was also here in Germany. And that was tears. I got to meet some really fun people. They did like graphic design, paste up. So they were like the old school people still doing, because all the people were working on little machines, the designers, because they couldn't afford big ones. And then we had like these big machines and we would rebuild designs for them. So I got into that kind of work, agency work, Flash, web design, HTML, all that kind of stuff happened to me. So, yeah, I did that after the .com, and I was always working for agency, but I didn't have my own agency. And so in 2001,
Oh dear, he's frozen, folks. Hopefully he's going to come back. We might have to start afresh.
Everybody raise your hand if you miss Flash.
Well, I said I got into it actually. It was really influenced. It was all the rage, and yeah. I started doing some work for an agency, and the program. Can you send a message to Max through chat saying he's totally frozen?
Cause, yeah, we can do that.
Because I'm not sure if he knows that he's. Okay. You totally froze, Max. Actually, so. Maybe you can tell us how you got into AI as well. Can you go?
Yeah, on? Sure. I didn't want to get too far. I just wanted. Where did you? Where did I stop?
You stopped
Flash.
The Flash bit. Right.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say that from that Flash times, I kind of was working for agencies. I got my own agency in 2001. Kind of got into the whole world optimizer. We called ourselves, and we did our own. CMSs at the time for Flash and for HTML, and how I got into WordPress, just that little story, and then I'm going to go over to AI, was that I was actually doing my own CMSs, but I also was side-eyeing text pattern. I don't know if you guys know that. That was like a thing slightly before WordPress from Gene Allen. I was also in that VC 200 fund. We were kind of getting that thing going. I think Matt Wollenbeck was also in that connected to Gene Allen at the time. And then WordPress 1.0 came out. So I'm really always in the whole crowd, because I was watching how WordPress always developed, because I saw it from the get-go. So it was very interesting to me all the time. So, but we can fast forward now. There's a lot more that happened.
Yeah, we can go over. We've got very similarities. We've got similarities in our background. So how did you get into... So I got into it through Flash and action scripting, and but how did your interest in AI start to develop?
Early on, actually, also 90s, because I was also in computer science. I was into science fiction, as I said, and I really loved all that. And I kind of was a library child, and I was going through the books about neural networks. Then there was a long AI winter, and I wasn't in research or anything. I was doing my life, as I explained. But then I don't know how I got into it, but I was on the waiting list for OpenAI. And when they opened up their first API, I think that was 2021 around there, with GPT-3 base model, I got an invitation. So that's when it started for me. And I was totally blown away that you had now a voice interface, or not voice, a language interface to computers. It was still pretty basic, and it wasn't that what we know now. It wasn't a chat interface and nothing. But it was that's how I started.
That's fantastic. Over to you, Kurt.
I really like the stories about how people got started or what their background was, because it seems like WordPress, or, you know, let's just say working on the internet, it just welcomes people from all walks of life, right? It's just such a cool thing to see that everybody can get into that. If we stick on the AI subject, though,
yeah,
can you kind of describe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like, there's language models, there's people are talking about generative AI, general intelligence. Like, could you give us kind of a maybe segment what the types of AI are? Are you familiar enough in those terms to fill us in?
Yeah, well, I started also with the LLMs. We all used, there was technology before the LLMs that was basically called convolutional networks and recurring neural networks, but they were very narrow AI, you would call them. They were one task, one solution, probably like pattern recognition of faces or text, like those kinds of things that existed before. But the breakthrough then came with LLMs, transformer technology, that with backpropagation and all that. That kind of came into was GPT-3 for open access. They had it internally before already, but then first time we could see the recurrence of neural networks again, and then having a big like symbolic space mapping out everything language related, and that was like a big breakthrough at the time. Your question was how that differs from. No, how was the question again?
Kind of like the different classifications of AI. I'll tell you where I'm kind of coming from with my question. The way I see it is there's this group of people in WordPress, in the internet that work like us. We're professionals and we talk about AI kind of at that level, right? And we know that there's some things we can do, and we know that can make some tasks quicker, but you shouldn't be fully dependent on it, all those things.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a whole segment of our audience that imagine AI to be this weird, magical thing that does things that it just doesn't do yet, too. So if you could kind of describe those different elements of AI and kind of what they do, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, as I said, we have now large language models, and they basically have mapped out huge amounts of data and text. They started with text. Now they went also multimodal, but they mapped out the symbolic connections between a lot of things in the world, and they kind of found also rationals. There's no personification I want to do, because I said that they kind of found the algorithm they're using kind of uncovered those connections between a lot of concepts. So it's called a latent space. It's more symbolic than actual language, and you can extrapolate text completion from those. That was mainly the main goal. You can get the text completion with the really base models they came out with, like GPT-3. And when you use it back then, you had an area was called the playground. You could go in there, and then you just had a single text box, and you basically could enter a sentence and then send it to the language model, and it would try to complete it, but it could also get into complete gibberish or into a loop. And so it wasn't really good at the time. But OpenAI kind of made it better with a new technique that's called reinforcement it's a reinforcement technique, and that made the networks behave more like in a chat interface. They could complete sentences in a more useful way to people using them. And that's when kind of when the public was invited to the entire thing. It's around end of 22 with ChatGPT, and then it blew up. But it was the funny thing is, was mid or beginning 2021 for me. Now I was already totally blown away by that simple text box. It was in the beginning, and I was telling everybody about it, and people didn't even understand. The moment they kind of came out with this chat interface, it totally blew up. Everybody got it and saw the potential in it.
Well, that's got similarities. I just want to see similarities to the web itself, because you had web, you know, the universities had access to the web much earlier, or very basic kind of. And then you had Firefox and Netscape, and they built the first browser. And then the internet kind of just blew up with that interface. And that seems very similar to what you've just said about the chat interface. Do you think I'm on the right track there, Max?
Yeah, it's totally. Basically, the browser made it popular for everyone. And I think the chat interface did the same thing here. Funny enough, I think it was half a year before, there was this guy on the internet called Dr. Alan D. Thompson. And he basically used that really simple API and created the chatbot. And then he had a conversation with it. But he prompted the whole conversation. There was no real chat interface, but he simulated the whole thing. And then he fed it into one of these talking avatars you had at the time already. And he called the whole thing Alita. That really blew me away, because there you really saw already the conversational nature. And I tried it myself. You could initialize a kind of chat interface where you would simulate a chat by writing speaker and then question, answer. And then it would complete always just a question in a long text block. There was no interface. And the funny thing, I actually simulated a conversation with Einstein at the time. It got into a loop after a while, but it was really funny because you could feed it all this information like everybody's used to now, but it was like a role play. Now, really, I was into role play for a while, and I did even a role play with my son based on that kind of concept. And that was before ChatGPT came out. It was, but this interface made it accessible to everybody. And one thing I really want to drive home from that era is when you try to simulate a chat by yourself, and you have this one text box, and you just put like question, answer. And if you wouldn't have a stop signal, it was called a stop signal. It was a certain string of text that would be passed, just like a regular expression. If it would find that string, it would stop generating tokens or words. And if you wouldn't put it in there, the AI would just talk to itself. It would pose a question. It would pose an answer. It would talk, pose a question. It would pose an answer. You really had the feeling, I'm not relevant here. It's just completing a virtual discussion with itself. And I think that drove it for me home, that systems like ChatGPT are simulating a conversation and always just breaking off at the moment where they say, now you have the chance to say something. But the completion algorithm would actually be glad to talk to itself.
Yeah, a bit like me, really. Kurt's from you. So the language models. So with OpenAI, was it a gradual improvement of the basic mathematics and the technology, or did OpenAI develop something new which really expanded the capacity of these language models? Because my understanding that the theory and the basic knowledge has been around quite a while in the AI communities from the early mid-50s, and it's come in waves and been overbuilt up, and then it's died down again. But did AI develop something, or was it they built this interface and they had the money and resources to offer it to the general public? Or did they add something unique to the mix?
A little bit of both, because Open AI was mainly a research organization at the time, and rolling out something like ChatGPT, that's why there was probably also all this delay, that also needed a big infrastructure partner, and that they got that with Microsoft. And before that, I think that it wouldn't have been possible to roll out ChatGPT like it's available now to millions of people. And it's the same as with WordPress. If you take the parallels here, back then when WordPress 1.0 came out, it was a little crew of people using it, and it blew up. And the same thing happened here. I mean, when I got first invited to the API, the few channels covering it, and I was totally hyped about it, and nobody else was talking about it on the web, and I was like, that's revolutionary what's happening here. And it was, I think it was a few 10,000 people, I guess, or something like that. And now we're talking about millions. And sure, they added a lot of infrastructure. They also added, like I said, after the base and GPT model, they added a technique called reinforcement learning from human feedback. And that's like tacked on to make it more human friendly and useful. And then they also, with that technique, they brought out an instruct model that could program better or understand code better. And then they brought out this ChatGPT interface. So there are little parts that went together, interface, backend, and technology refinement. The base technology is still the same, that made it successful.
So in your opinion, it's got very similar, what they've done is very similar, obviously different, but has similar flavor to what Netscape did with the browser. There are kind of similarities, obviously. So they didn't fundamentally add to the background technology, but what they did around interface and usability is can't be diminished. It's still quite important. Do you think I'm on the right track?
Yeah, and even if I remember my Netscape 3 days fondly, even if OpenAI is like overtaken by some other big company or some new technology breakthrough comes, I think they have laid the groundwork and will go into the history books for being the company. Even if, like in the case of Netscape, they go away, but I don't think they're going to go away that soon, and that because there are.
He's frozen again. He's frozen, right? Little interesting phrase. Obviously, Berlin doesn't have a good connection. Hopefully, he's back again.
Okay, I'm back.
Isn't there something wrong with the internet in Berlin? He's frozen again a little bit. He's back again. So,
am I back?
Yeah, you're back again. I'd like to cover this. Are you there, Max? Are you frozen?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm here.
This thing about the language model and general AI, I've listened, obviously, I haven't got a high formal education in mathematics, and I'm not an expert, but I've listened to a lot of resources. I've watched your latest presentations on the subject as well. And I think you've done an excellent job, Max. That's why I thought you would be a good guest to invite to the show. But I've never observed such contradictory information or views from a set of experts in my life, actually. Not normally when certain experts have paid a lot of money to have a certain view, but these people seem to be extremely honest. But I've never observed such a different view. So I've observed people that have worked for OpenAI and who are experts or scientists in the field saying that in the next 5 years, in the next 3 to 5 years, they actually think that general AI will be available and it will be the biggest change in human society ever observed. And then I've observed other scientists, AI scientists, saying that there's a total inflation between what a language model can do and general AI. And it's, they say that it's been totally inflated. So what's your general view, and why do you think there's such a mismatch in what the experts in the field are saying? Is he frozen?
He's frozen.
Well, I do believe he's frozen.
Oh, he's with you. Okay, I'm back. This is, so I don't know what's going on today. there was some construction works in my house. Okay. So yeah, to your last question was what are my views about those glaring optimistic predictions.
Would you agree? It's really quite different what these different experts in the same field are saying. Would you agree with that element of what I've outlined to you?
Yeah, totally. Because we also have to keep in mind, if you have, we talked about it before, if you have a growth from 2021 to now with all the hype cycle, was after 2022 with ChatGPT, there's been such an influx of money into that sector. You can't take everybody serious, because if they wouldn't be tooting in their own horn, they wouldn't maybe get the funds they're getting. And you have to be pretty optimistic. But there is, if you stay on the ground level of optimism, there is a lot of potential going forward with this technology. And just the latest releases have shown that there is still gains to be had. And there doesn't seem to be an immediate ceiling. But there is also, and there are a lot of boomers that actually see that as well. And they go in the other direction. They are people that kind of see the dangers more than the benefits, and are talking about the end of humanity based on that quick change. I'm a little more grounded, and I'm a user as most are. I use AI for my daily work, and I kind of see the benefits in my day to day, and that's where I'm judging AI from. I also watch the all the news coming out, but I judge it by what's available.
Before we go to our break, I know we've only covered one question, but it's the biggest, two questions. Mm-hmm. But the second question on our list is a very big question. Before we go for our break, is there a real clear difference between these language models and general AI, or is there a lot of overlap between a language model and the concept of general AI, general intelligence? Because is it so overlapped that you can't really put the two in two different buckets? Because some people seem to be suggesting what you can do with a language model really doesn't affect the concept of general AI, general artificial intelligence. How would you respond to what I've just said?
Yeah, it goes a little bit into a philosophical discussion, and it's also just from a technology perspective, there's already a split in the community. There are many people, especially on the OpenAI side, that believe that the scale paradigm to just get bigger and bigger, and also now that doing a little bit of architecture changes in their system will lead to something like AGI. And then there is also another sort of school, that there has to be a step change, some breakthrough to have actual AGI. But that brings us to the term AGI, and that is a very undefined term. So you can go into that in a moment if you want.
Well, we won't do that at the end, but because we need to get through the other. But this is one of the biggest questions of this interview, and mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this myself. Like I say, it's extremely interesting, but also extremely frustrating because there's so many different contradictory views and experts saying completely.
But it's an open question. So there has to be that kind of mindset because there is no clear answer yet because the goal hasn't been achieved. And there are different ways to get there, different people believe in. But where, as you said, that's one thing that certainly is true. It's a gray area, and it's certainly...
But Max, I'm a simple soul at heart. I just want to... Right, we're gonna go for our mid break. Hopefully, you have got something from that conversation. We've had some technical problems. Max from Berlin hasn't been paying his internet bill, So there we go. But we've struggled a few, and hopefully you got something from the first half. We've got some fabulous questions for Max in the second half. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code PODCAST20. That's PODCAST20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a feast of AI. I've lost Kurt, and I think I've lost Max most of the way. But I think we've had a good discussion. It is a hot topic. But before we go into the second half of the show, I want to point out, if you're looking for a great WordPress partner hosting, but much more, for your larger membership or community-focused websites or any large project, why don't you look at becoming a partner with WP Tonic? We've got over 10 years experience in helping freelancers with their bigger projects. It's fantastic to have a reliable partner in the background to help you. We offer some great packages to our freelancer partners. You can find more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners, and why don't we build something amazing together? So I'm going to throw it over to Kirk again for question three.
Jonathan's going to get mad at me because I have a curiosity that I need to ask you, Max.
So you're not going to keep to the outline of the questions. That's what you're saying, really, isn't it?
I'm so curious about this, and it's an extension of question two, but it's not one of the established questions. When I have the unbelievable pleasure to travel outside of the United States and interact with people in other countries, I'm always amazed at how many languages people know. So you say you're in Germany. I assume you speak German. You probably... I don't know, speak Swiss, French, Italian, who knows how many languages. But when you use Spanish. AI,
yeah.
When you use AI, because Americans are so arrogant and because we build a lot of these tools, do you find yourself normally working in English, or do you get different results if you put in different languages for your questions and prompts?
That's a great question. I usually work in English. I've been actually, as I kind of outlined in the beginning, I've been brought up by an American in Spain. So I was learning Spanish and English before I learned German. But I still think in English, and for me, it's English. Also, the biggest chunk of in data the AIs have trained on is English, but they kind of looked into it. Certainly, OpenAI has done it. And we have also really big chunks now of German and all this kind of European languages. And it's pretty fluent in German. I can also talk with it in German. And when I use it with the kids, certainly German. And yeah.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by that one little chunk because I didn't know how that would work. If I stick to the outline, the next question is, how do you think AI is going to affect, you know, web development, or even more fascinating to me, design? Like, I'm graphically handicapped. I'm great at taking assets that customers give me and making awesome websites, or using designers on my team that are graphical, but I am not personally a graphic designer. So how do you think AI will affect web development or design over the next couple of years?
Okay, when we look into the future, we already, I mean, many of the listeners will probably know about that there are AIs that can create images. There are AIs that can write text now, like ChatGPT. So you have all these disciplines, and the models are actually getting multimodal. So the latest models of OpenAI actually can produce images. We are still getting images from a separate model, but because they haven't rolled it out yet, but actually the model can itself dream and create images. All those kinds of capabilities can be used, and I already use them. In many cases, you still see that they're AI generated, but it's really evolving really quick. And I use, for example, a lot of the image capabilities for placeholder images or text placeholders in my design work. And lately, you can even request websites designs from AIs, or also image AIs or specialized AIs, and you can use them for quick blueprints or to just present something quickly to the client if you want to have options. So was that the question? Or where do I see it going?
Yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, thinking about it from an agency perspective, some agencies are actually like almost living in fear that a year and a half, 2 years from now, a customer is going to be able to walk up to a microphone and say, create me a website with this name that can make appointments and is about landscaping, you know, and like, poof, here's your website. To a certain extent, some of that's already true.
Yeah.
But, you know, how simple will it be? Like, I don't know. Do you think it would get to the point where it would be literally that simple to just tell it to make it and put it on this URL and snap your fingers and it's done?
Yeah, I think it will get there. But then again, having somebody create a website for you is not only the task of creating a website. It's positioning you in the market, keeping you, holding your hand, and so forth. So there's a big market still going to be left over. And even if the client could do it, I mean, if you're honest, I was always fascinated with CMSs, even though I was also writing direct code. Because I always thought, okay, I can hand it off to my client, or my client can do something in that system. That's why I actually started with all those kind of systems like TextPattern and WordPress afterwards. But there were so many times the client didn't even want to go in there. And I think for a long time, all the systems are going to be really helpful, but to the developers and to the agency owners. And sure, there's always going to be a client that says, I don't have the budget, and I'm going to just talk into a mic and have my website done. And maybe those don't need an agency because they're too small. Maybe that market shifts a little bit. But overall, I think the agency market's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of insight in your answer there. It's very similar to the answer we got with Kevin Geary. I don't know if he can hear me or not because he's frozen. But Kevin Geary operated under the pretense that customers
I'm back. I'm back.
Good, good. We interviewed Kevin Geary, and he was very resolute in the idea that when he works with a website from an agency perspective, you know, customers wouldn't be making edits or doing things. And to your point, you know, a couple hundred websites out of the chute, and everyone says they want access to edit it, but then very few actually jump in and edit anything. So that's a really good point. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, comment. You know, at the present, you've got Codepilot, and, you know, to me, it seems like a UI, a coding UI interface on steroids. Will the tools in the next 2 to 3 years get to a level where it replaces a lower to intermediate coder? You know, would it get to the level where you would need to know what you're doing? You would need some education in the field, but a lot of the present work that a lot of developers are involved with has been removed. Do you think in the next 2 to 3 years we'll get to that level, or is that something that's out of the scope of the foreseeable future, Max?
No, totally. We will get there. And we're already having, I mean, you mentioned Microsoft Copilot. It's like a text completion on steroids. We already have systems also now, much newer, like Cursor, or and that are more integrated IDEs, and they have much more capabilities already. You can chat and do a whole multi-file projects and stuff like that. It's already happening. And next is coming Devin, I think it's called, and also systems like the just rolled out OA01 from OpenAI that can actually mull over an idea with reasoning a little bit. Like, it's fake reasoning, but it's still reasoning. And we are getting a system called Orion next year, I guess. It's somewhere around there, but that's still in the teapot, or how you say, in the tea leaves. And I'm totally convinced that beginner and mid-tier developer will be not replaced, but enhanced, and it will be at the level that they have coworkers that agentic coworkers that are based on AI that could help them or work with them together, even working on multi-step tasks and come back with the results.
So kind of based on your reply, let's go on to the next question. Let's say you had a young relative or a friend, a relative of a friend, a young person that's thinking of going to university or getting into web development or that side of the business, and they were asking you, should I really focus on this, or is it really not a field that I should spend any time in? What general advice would you give them? Is it something that they should still focus and they have the prospect of having a reasonably long-term career?
I'm with some caveats, but yes, I wish I learned a lot by going into the fundamentals and the web fundamentals. And even with systems producing at the level of a developer, it's like if you were working in a company and you get that code handed to you, you still have to check it into your company workflow or into your repository. And for the future, there is still going to be human oversight in either way. That requires also mastering fundamentals to validate the AI outputs. Also, I would tell the young person, come on, embrace AI. Well, no, that's something I would tell older persons. I would say, tell them, embrace AI as a tool and not as a threat, because it's kind of something you have to live with. That's our new world we're in. But the young person, I would probably tell, learn the fundamentals so you can actually validate the outputs. So, and then work with it together.
All right, over to you, Kurt.
Well, now we're all kind of curious. That, you know, the listeners and viewers have heard you talk about AI. So what are the tools, what are the main tools that you use in your daily work? Like if you choose a tool, I am not I'm not a prompt expert. So I use tools that help me cheat.
Yeah.
So what tools do you like to use?
In the beginning, I was very fascinated about the exploding market, because there was so much influx of money and startups, and I kind of booked some of them. But in the end, I got like a tools fatigue. And also I realized, because I was programming myself with the OpenAI API, that many of those tools were like OpenAI wrappers with a little prompt engineering behind them sprinkled on. And then they wanted to have a subscription from me. If it's really useful, I would pay it. But usually after a while, I found out how to do it myself with the base model or with ChatGPT. And the tools I use, that's why I kind of reverted back then to, I settled on the bottom up approach. The tools are at our current time in history, they are most effective in generating code still, because that's a really big chunk of information they have ingested. So I really like to use them on a code editor level. I use them as we discussed with Microsoft's Copilot. I went into also tools like Cursor now recently. I just tried it out, but it's pretty new. And I use the interfaces from ChatGPT, from also recently Claude, and Claude Artifacts are really great. They give you like a visual feedback for boilerplating stuff out or doing like a little code explorations. And those are the kind of tools. And one big tool we could also maybe mention I'm using a lot is Perplexity. And that's a kind of search engine based on AI that for me, it has replaced Google. And there's only not that many kind of moments when I go back to Google. Here and there I go. But that will be going forward, because OpenAI is also going to probably release something along those lines called Search GPT. That's going to be changing the whole SEO market, and it's going to be interesting times coming ahead, because a lot of people in the WordPress ecosystem work in that segment. Yeah.
Well, how do you see that change? You know, because I think it's dependent on your ability to verbalize or write prompts that can actually, and because you've got that experience, but you can get into a technical bubble where the majority of population, if you don't really know how to present the question, the prompt, you're not going to get, I would imagine that you're going to get you spend as much time messing around with the prompts as you, or the verbal commands, if you're doing it verbally, as you would do in doing a general Google search. But I'm only making that assumption. How do you respond to what I've just outlined?
In the beginning, I've witnessed that as well. As I said, I was very optimistic before ChatGPT came out, and I was running around telling everybody about it. And then I just sat them in front of my computer in the playground. There was like one text box, and I said, type something. And they were like completely shell-shocked. They didn't know what to do. And I think a lot of people are having that experience as well, or they just type in one question. They don't get the completely right answer, or the answer they were expecting, and they kind of give up a little. Yeah, in the beginning, you needed prompt engineering, but that is a thing that's going away slowly, especially with those search engines. You can just take natural language, ask your question, and you get into a discussion about your topic, and it's individualized to you. So if you, and I really love that OpenAI has offered a web search inside of their interface as well. So in ChatGPT, you can actually, if you want to have in-context learning, that means that inside of a conversation you're having with the AI, you can always prompt it to research something, and it goes out into the web, gets some information back, and puts it into your conversation. Yeah, it's a skill, but it's going away that there is a need to learn it, because the latest models that just came out, like, was that like a week or 2 weeks ago, or 1 week, I guess, 01, those models get a little hidden space to prompt themselves. So you kind of put in your question, then the latest models mull over the intent you're actually putting into the question, and they come back with a much more relevant answer, or even with a question, with follow-up.
So could you envision this army of SEO agencies and experts that their purpose will be to manipulate the AI models to
going forward?
They won't be interested in manipulating the end user. Their interest will be to manipulate the AI agent that produces the result to the end user.
Yeah, so they still want to have the user to buy something, but they will have to play like a billiard over the border. They will have to try to get a good ranking. I mean, the AI still search the web, even if it's like a semantic search, more symbolic space, latent space, but it's still
See, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Can you see where I'm going? That at the present moment, you could use the AI agent to give you a recommendation, and you can, to some degree, feel that that AI agent's going to give you what you consider an honest reply. But if the agent is being totally manipulated by outside forces, you no longer have that confidence that you're being given the answer that meets your honest requirements. Can you see where I'm coming from, Max?
I totally see that. And I guess that's also why we have different product lines for those tasks. And we are seeing that even though the OpenAI can actually search the web when you're using ChatGPT, and you can say, search GPT and
yeah, you're back. Yeah.
So they're coming out with a new product, Search GPT, and that's kind of copying the product that's also very popular currently, Perplexity. And they are, in a way, they are a conversation, but they are also pull in all those web references. So it's not such a big shock and not such a big change at first. And you probably could also still sell ads at the side, maybe not inject it directly into the responses, but they're creating a space where they could probably be an intermediary solution between a direct chat interface and a search engine. So I think there is still going to be the diversity for a user to also see alternative results for a while, at least.
Yeah, I'm a bit more cynical because of this. I can see it be totally manipulated and people. But that's the
Yeah, but let's be honest. I mean, Google is a dumpster fire.
It's a sewer, Max.
It can only get better, and that's why I'm using Perplexity, because I really hate using Google these days. I have to go through all the...
Unfortunately, the cynical side of me, Max, feels that what's happened to Google will happen to your beloved Perplexity. Unfortunately, over to you again, Kirk. You have the last, because I know you're going to disappear in the next 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah. So... I think it's our last question, Max. And it is, if you had a time machine like Doctor Who or think about H.G. Wells, you travel back in time and you go to the beginning of your career, right? Hanging at the commune, and you go back to the beginning of your career. What?
You commie, Max. You commie, Max. Marxist, Max.
What?
Cultural comment, yeah, please.
What advice would you give yourself knowing what you know now?
Well, maybe invest in NVIDIA a little earlier. No, I'm just joking. I would probably, with all this technology background and all what we're talking about, I go back to the humanities. I had a time I was so invested in all this. I bought my MacBook Titan at the time. I was in Spain back there. I should have gone to my stepfather, and he was a wood sculptor, and done a little more work with him because he kind of passed away. I'm a little sad. I didn't have my priorities right then. And after all this talk about technology, for me, that's the thing where I would. You know, I don't want to end on a sad note, but it's kind of, after all, humans are more important than machines, and I would like to end on something like that.
I don't know that I could agree with you more on that. I'm in a phase of life right now where I am working tirelessly. Now, knowing that I'll be able to unplug just a little bit and spend more time with kids and family and community and stuff. It's super, super important. For me personally, the more prevalent AI becomes and the more focused people get on technology, the more I want to have a fire pit and a bottle of red wine and just enjoy the company of others.
I mean, that's also the big problems of AI in a way. And we have to really see how that plays out, because all those big investors have put down so much money and they want to have a return on investment. But in the long run, I mean, I as I said in the beginning, I'm a science fiction fan. I would hope for something like a Star Trek universe where we have more time or leisure or work as kind of a passion. I really see that you couldn't be fine.
Oh, more time to get into mischief, Max.
Yeah.
Oh, he's right frozen, but that, you know, is he going to come back?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I do. But you, why not? I mean, I'm not mischief, but I got a lot. Often there is also, yeah.
Well, I think it's time, Max, you've been fantastic. We've powered through our technical problems, but I think it's time to end our discussion before your meter totally runs out, Max. But you have to come back in the new year. You have to come back in the new year because I think this has really been a fun discussion, Max, and you've done a fantastic job.
Yep.
How can people find out more about you and what you're up to, Max?
So you can find me on my personal website, maxzeibel.de, Germany. And you can find me at maxzeibel at Twitter. And with my agency, it's called worldoptimizer.com. And yeah, I'm happy to hear from you. And we certainly left the topic, the philosophical topic of AGI on the table.
And, well, you have to come back in the new year and we'll discuss that. I can get into Wittgenstein with you and Turing. So, Kurt, what's the best way for people to find out more about you?
Yeah, go do that. Let's do some Dennett.
For business, the best way is Mañana Nomás, mañananomás.com or anything on the internet. Mañana Nomás generally points to me. But if it's personal and you just want to make a connection, I am on LinkedIn almost every day and I am the only Kurt Von Annen on LinkedIn. Easy to find, easy to connect.
And please share this show with your social media platforms. I really honestly feel this is the only place in the WordPress podcast world that you find these type of discussions. Hopefully you're enjoying them. They are a bit different to the normal fare that you will find in the WordPress podcast world. And give us some feedback and please share them. Our audience is growing. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.